said, happiness is nothing more than good health combined with a bad memory. And that philosophy resonates with me when I think about bad decisions I made. Like the weekend my parents were visiting from Chicago to visit my very serious girlfriend, Kristen, for the first time. And it was a very nice weekend. We had a lot of good experiences. But eventually, I started to feel like I needed a break from talking. Just a little less talking. I said, hey, let's watch some TV. I found out on the guide that there was a Sopranos rerun on. And I was the only one who had seen the Sopranos. I've seen every single one of them. None of them ever watched it. I talked them into it. So we all sat down, and unfortunately, it was an episode with very high amounts of sex and violence, and that is on the Sopranos scale of sex and violence. But unfortunately, I was pretty zoned out, so I was just sitting there on the couch staring at the TV, and all of a sudden, Kristen turns to me and says, Kent, turn this off! And my mom, oh, I'm so glad you said that. And, you know, so that's an example of a boneheaded move I'd like to forget. Helen Keller said, so long as the memory of beloved friends live in my heart, I shall say that life is good. And that philosophy resonates with me, remembering this past summer when Kristen, the boys, and I visited Indianapolis. My cousin Jimmy and his wife hosted a cookout where extended family came together to relax in the backyard. We were thrilled because the little cousins, as we call them, who are between the ages of 2 and 18, they don't get to spend enough time together. They got to hang out. It was especially tender for me to spend time with my Uncle Steve, whose memory quite often fails him these days. He has a significant amount of dementia. Fortunately, he was having a pretty good day cognitively. We got to talk. Walking down memory lane, I told stories and we laughed about times when Uncle Steve would lay on the living room floor and take on his two sons and me, and even though it was 3-on-1 and my two cousins are big boys, Uncle Steve always won in the wrestling. Then the group, often for Thanksgiving, would just go and sit around the dining room table, eat turkey, green bean casserole, sweet potatoes, and cranberry sauce. Recalling these memories, Uncle Steve smiled from ear to ear with a happiness that his family said he doesn't exhibit too often these days. Albert Schweitzer's quote about happiness being tied to bad memory has some truth and certainly humor, but it's also true that in many cases, losing memory is a terribly difficult experience. Of course, many people like my Uncle Steve are in different stages of disabling memory loss. Neuroscientist Lisa Genova wrote a well-researched novel, Still Alice, in which the main character, Alice, is a bright, impressive Harvard professor diagnosed at age 50 with early Alzheimer's disease, early onset. Alice forgets the recipe for her white chocolate bread pudding, which she's been making from memory for decades. Alice forgets that both her mother and sister have both died, and she keeps thinking they're going to walk through the front door for a visit. Experts say the novel is an accurate and educational portrait of the realities of memory breaking down with Alzheimer's. Ms. Genova said she wrote the book to demonstrate how folks with Alzheimer's stand on ground that is constantly shifting beneath their feet. She said the most common struggle she sees people face, though, is the alienation and loneliness of Alzheimer's. Many of us go through periods which feel as if the ground is shifting beneath our feet. Ground can shift with depression, sad events, or simply running too fast. All can reduce the capacity to remember well. And hey, even when we feel centered and stable, remembering well is harder than one might think. One study indicates that human beings remember with less accuracy than many might assume. For example, when thinking about childhood memories, studies show that many people are susceptible to believing a story they heard about themselves to be true, even when it is not. There's a wonderful play, The Memory of Water, written by Sheila Stevenson. Three sisters have been relatively estranged for some time, and their mother dies. They come back to their hometown to gather, to handle the situation, and create a memorial service. And the three daughters, spending time together now, share about significantly differing memories of their mother, and they bicker about whose memories are true. I think many of us can identify with that dynamic of disagreeing with folks about what did or did not happen. Memory researchers Pat Murphy and Paul Doherty wrote, "People tend to think of memory as being like a tape recorder or a camera, capturing everything that's out there. But that does not match with the current thinking of most memory researchers. Research shows that your memory of an event is something you construct from bits and pieces, from what you saw and heard and experienced and felt at the time, from things people told you afterward, from suggestions and thoughts and implications, all filtered by your attitude and by who you are." It's a lot of moving pieces of factors in the mix. And here's the thing. You only get so many bits and pieces of memory. So you should ask, which ones do you want to keep front and center? Which key memories do you select to define the narrative of your life? Every day we make decisions about how to organize our memories. Here's an example of a person who took serious choices about how and what to remember. Now in his 50s, Eboo Patel grew up as a self-described American Muslim from India in a predominantly white suburb of Chicago. And Eboo shares the following two stories. He was one of the only kids of color in his junior high gym class. In the locker room, a number of white kids pushed him around, smacked him with wet towels, called him racist names. When he went home after school, he could not bring himself to tell his mother about the troubles, including the fact that he often ended up slumped in the corner of the locker room crying. In the same time period, Eboo's parents convinced him to commit to community service work. Family agreed Eboo would get involved with the local YMCA. Eboo quickly became very enthusiastic to join the Y's youth leadership program. And one of the components of the program was singing songs. He loved to sing these songs. He sang them everywhere, including at home. And one thing was that many of the songs had Christian overtones. So he says his pops was not thrilled about that. And one time he says, Dad was feeling especially defensive of and righteous about Muslimness. And Ibu overheard his father asking his mother, do you think they're trying to teach Christianity to our kids? And his mother replied, I hope so. I hope they teach the kids Jewish and Hindu songs as well. That's the kind of Muslims we want our kids to be. As he grew older, Ibu decided which memory to claim as a guiding light. He could have stayed bitter about the racism he suffered from his fellow students. Ibu says he does not forget those bad experiences. He just chooses not to prioritize them. Instead, he chooses to focus on remembering his mother, encouraging interfaith sharing and respect. This became a defining moment in the arc of his life. Forest Church says that with practice, we can organize our memories in ways that prove most conducive to balance, reconciliation, and hope. With practice, we can organize our memories in ways that prove most conducive to balance, reconciliation, and hope. And notice here that Forrest says, with practice. With practice. It doesn't come naturally to everybody. The benefits of memory are tangible, so we practice. Went over one of them with the kids. Just get yourself going with the earliest memory. I find that a fascinating conversation amongst people. Another practice from our small group ministry curriculum on memory this month. Figure out what memento needs to return to the center of your life. Many mementos represent what people meant to us. I have here my friend David's cigarette holder, which he gave to me in the last months of his life. While living and dying with AIDS, David taught me about grace, courage, and laughter. And when I need a little shot of memory of David, I touch and hold my little cigarette holder that he gave me. The third practice is to pass on a memory that matters in honor of her life. Gloria Delamar's children made a video for yesterday's memorial service. They actually made two videos containing photos of weddings, raking leaves, swimming, adorable little babies in strollers. We watched the video up on the screen. They were passing on memories of their mother, who they adored. What memories do you want to make sure that you take the time to share with others? One of the blessings of participating in church is that here we have the opportunity to build memories with family, friends, and complete strangers. With patience and practice, we heal. As this memory topic has been active this month, I've heard from a number of friends who reflect upon getting through divorce, how they got through such a difficult time of separation and loss, and they came to learn in many cases they had to focus on the memories of how they made it through. The friends who grabbed them and said, we're going to hang out. We're going to go do something fun. I'm going to meet you for tea and hold your hand. We're going to go for a walk in nature. Friends who made it through divorce remembering reconnecting with their love of animals or pets. And in any time of getting through grieving, a lot of people say it's the memory of reconnecting with a love, of reading books or poetry or cooking. Those memories can help us. How has working with memory provided healing, reconciliation, or hope for you? Who we are is shaped not as much by the full accumulation of all the events of our life than it is by the highlighting of key memories. Are your memories bolstering love, courage, and hope, or jealousy, fear, and despair? Don't forget the bad. Just choose not to focus on it too much. Which memory does our church need right now? Which memory do you need to feel more comfortable in your own skin and loving yourself? Imagine what would happen if in our beloved community, all of us grew to more intentionally remember in ways that promote compassion, respect, and empowerment.